From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
On this vote, the yeas are 230, the nays are 197, present is one. Article 1 is adopted.
That was Representative Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, detailing the vote on the first of two impeachment charges filed against President Donald Trump on Wednesday.
On this vote, the yeas are 229, the nays are 198, present is one. Article 2 is adopted.
The Speaker stood with her Democratic colleagues after the vote and explained the proceedings up to this point from their perspective.
Good evening. December 18th, a great day for the Constitution of the United States, a sad one for America that the President's reckless activities necessitated us, our having to introduce articles of impeachment. May I thank our six chairs who for a long period of time have been legislating, investigating, and litigating. Today that came to a culmination on the floor of the House with the Judiciary Committee under the leadership of Jerry Nadler of New York and the Intelligence Committee under the leadership of Adam Schiff of California, brought the articles of impeachment to the floor to a conclusion where they have passed. I thank them for their tremendous leadership. I thank Chairwoman Maxine Waters of California, of the Financial Services Committee, Richie Neal of Massachusetts, the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, Carolyn Maloney, the chair of the Gov Oversight Committee, and of course, Adam Schiff, the chair of the Intelligence Committee, for their great work over a period of time. I just want to say before yielding to the chairman that I could not be prouder or more inspired than by the moral courage of the House Democrats. We never asked one of them how they were going to vote. We never whipped this vote. We saw the vote. Well, you saw the public statements that some of them made. We saw the result when everyone else did. The statements on the floor about patriotism and about being very true to the vision of our founders. And so I view this day, this vote, as something that we did to honor the vision of our founders to establish a republic, the sacrifice of our men and women in uniform to defend our democracy and that republic, and the aspirations of our children that they will always live in a democracy, and that we have tried to do everything we can to make sure that that is their reality. We'll hear from our chairman, and then we'll take three questions. I'm now honored to yield with great appreciation and respect to distinguished chair of the Judiciary Committee, Chairman Nadler.
Thank you. The framers reserved the power of impeachment for the gravest offenses against our Constitution, against our liberty, and against our democratic institutions. President Trump used the powers of his office for his own personal political gain to the detriment of the national security interests of the United States. That is the very definition of an impeachable offense. When Congress began to investigate President Trump's wrongdoing, he engaged in an unprecedented pattern of obstruction. That, too, is why the impeachment power exists. A president who subverts both our elections and our constitutional system of checks and balances puts himself above the law, and it is Congress' duty to hold the president, any president, accountable. It gives us no pleasure to stand here today, but President Trump's conduct has put our next election at risk. President Trump's behavior puts the integrity of our constitutional order at risk, and President Trump's continued actions put the rule of law at risk. The framers gave us the power of impeachment for exactly this reason, And in fulfillment of our oath and obligation to the American people, today we took action to hold President Trump accountable for the serious and undisputed risk he poses to our free and fair elections and to the separation of powers that safeguards our liberty. A president must not be allowed to become a dictator. I want to thank Speaker Pelosi, Chairman Schiff, my fellow investigative chairs, and all of my colleagues who today defended the principles upon which our nation was established. Today, the House of Representatives did its constitutional duty. Today, we lived up to our responsibility to the American people by taking action to defend our national security, to preserve our democratic elections, and to show that no one, not even the president, is above the law. And now gives me, I'm now happy to introduce the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff.
The President of the United States has been impeached for now only the third time in history. The President of the United States should be tried. And the question is now whether Senator McConnell will allow a fair trial in the Senate, whether the majority leader will allow a trial that involves witnesses and testimony and documents, a trial that should be fair to the president, yes, but should be fair also to the American people. The American people want to hear from people like John Bolton. The American people want to hear from people like Mick Mulvaney. The American people want to see what's in those documents that the president has been hiding at the State Department, in the Office of Management and Budget, in the White House itself. We have done our duty here in the House. We have upheld the Constitution. We have done as the framers would have us do when a president abuses his office and obstructs a co-equal branch of government. The question now is, will the Senate uphold its duty? Will the senators uphold their oath? Do the senators want to hear from the witnesses? Do they want a real trial? We have to hope that they do. The reason we undertook this extraordinary step is because the president not only abused his office, but threatens to abuse it again, threatens to interfere again by inviting foreign interference in our election. The remedy isn't complete as long as the president is free to continue to invite foreign interference in our affairs. I just want to close by thanking the Speaker for guiding the Congress through this tumultuous time. There's no one, I think, who could have guided the Congress with a steadier hand or with more insight and intellect than the Speaker of the House. And I also want to thank my colleagues, in particular, so many new members of the House who have displayed such courage, who have shown that they truly have the courage of their convictions. Thank you.
Just want to add that one person who isn't with us physically in this room, but I know is present, was present all day for the deliberations, our chair of the Gov Reform, our Oversight Committee chair, our North Star, Elijah Cummings. He said, when the history books are written about this tumultuous era, I want them to show that I was among those in the House of Representatives who stood up to lawlessness and tyranny. He also said, somewhat presciently, when we're dancing with the angels, the question will be, what did you do to make sure we kept our democracy intact? We did all we could, Elijah. We passed the two articles of impeachment. The president is impeached.
Madam Speaker, do you view the House's role in this as complete now, or are there steps you might take to try to ensure, as the chairman suggested, a more fair trial in the Senate?
You mean more fair trial than they're contemplating? Because we had a very fair process,
yes, ma'am,
in the House of Representatives. I would yield to our... let me just put it another way. We have legislation approved by the Rules Committee that will enable us to decide how we will send over the articles of impeachment. We cannot name managers until we see what the process is on the Senate side, and I would hope that that will be soon, as we did with our legislation, our Resolution 660, to describe what the process would be. So far, we haven't seen anything that looks fair to us, so hopefully it will be fair, and when we see what that is, we'll send our
manuscripts. Can I follow up? So you would withhold, you would wait to send the articles until you understand what the Senate's going to do?
We'll make a decision as a group, as we always have, as we go along.
So you can presumably withhold the articles
Well, again, we'll decide what that dynamic is, but we hope that the resolution of that process will be soon in the Senate. Cheryl, did you have one, Cheryl? Did you have a question, Cheryl? Yeah.
I do have a question. What do you consider a fair trial? What are you looking for?
Could you give me a thing for it then? Well, let me tell you what I don't consider a fair trial. This is what I don't consider a fair trial. That Leader McConnell has stated that he's not an impartial juror, that he's going to take his cues, in quotes, from the White House, and he is working in total coordination with the White House counsel's office. Any comments, my colleagues, on that?
Let me just say that obviously Senator McConnell, by that declaration, has said that he is, so as in effect the foreman of the jury, is working with the defendant's counsel. That's not fair. We'll have to see what else, but that's certainly an indication of an intention to have an unfair trial.
Look, it's up to the senators to make their own decision, working together, hopefully, in recognition of their witnesses that the president withheld from us, their documents that the president withheld from us, and we would hope that that information would be available in a trial to go to the next step, because that's another level in terms of conviction in terms of this. But right now, the president is impeached.
Go ahead. Can you never send the articles? Is it possible you never send the articles?
We're not having that discussion. We have done what we have set out to do. The House has acted on a very sad day to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, to do so in a manner that was fair, even though the other side was mischaracterizing it. Nonetheless, it was fair and appropriate and urgent. So we will make our decision as to when we're going to send it, when we see what they're doing on the Senate side, but that's a decision that we will make jointly. You're starting to act like another country. Don't shout, okay? Who's not going to shout a question? Yes, sir.
Can you guarantee that the impeachment articles will be at some point sent to the Senate?
I'm not
guaranteeing that.
That would have been our intention, but we'll see what happens over there.
So you may not send
that. You're asking me, are we all going to go out and play in the snow? That has not been part of our conversation. That has not been part of our conversation. Excuse me, what? I'm sorry, dear.
We need clarification since you have raised the prospect of not sending articles over.
No, I've never raised the prospect.
It seems like
you asked the question. I never raised the prospect. I said we're not sending it tonight because it's difficult to determine who the managers would be until we see the arena in which we will be participating. That's all I said. I never raised the prospect.
Any timetable?
Well, we'll see what they, when they come forward. It's up to the Senate to say what their rules will be. My colleagues, do you want to say anything about this? Because it is, this is a serious matter, even though the majority leader in the United States Senate says it's okay for the foreman of the jury to be in cahoots with the lawyers of the accused. That doesn't sound right to us. But let's see when they understand what we have acted. Now they'll understand what their responsibilities are, and we'll see what that is. But I never raised that possibility. No.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any other comments, anyone?
No.
But anyway, let me again thank our chairman, all six of them, and our darling Elijah. They did a remarkable job. And I think you probably, hopefully, will be inspired by the moral courage of our caucus, especially as the distinguished chairman recognized our freshman members who came here, reviewed the facts, understood the Constitution, made their decision, again, to honor their oath of office. We're very proud of them.
If they expected President Trump to cower inside the White House in a Nixon-esque manner, they were most likely disappointed. The president was in Battle Creek, Michigan, in the region's largest venue, filling the 5,000 seats there with 20,000 overflow standing outside in the cold. The president began with a discussion of what he's been doing for Michigan workers.
So, Ford Motor Company just announced that it is investing $1.5 billion in two auto factories in the Detroit area, creating another 3,000 Michigan jobs. And that's on top of the many other investments we've gotten from Japanese companies, car companies, and other companies. But they're all coming in, and a lot of them are coming to Michigan. And I say, hey, go to Michigan. Sometimes they'll go south, and that's okay, whatever. I want them in this country. But ideally, I want to fill them up. We're doing so well in Michigan with the auto companies now. You're back. You're back. So you're back. Very proud of it. Very proud of it. But while we're creating jobs, fighting for Michigan workers, and achieving numbers that you've never seen before, incredible victories for the American people are happening. You ever hear it's the economy, stupid? You know, that was Clinton saying, if you have a good economy. I have the greatest economy in the history of this country. And nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about it. You know, if you're a Democrat, they say, oh, it's the if the economy's any good. And let me just tell you a little secret. If crooked Hillary would have won, your economy would have crashed. You were going down. The regulations were taking it down. The taxes were taking it down. Instead of being up 92% or whatever you're up, a lot, you would have been down. You would have been in less than half. It was crashing. For all those people that would say, oh, it's the Obama. Let me tell you something. You were dying. And if you look at that first period of a couple of months, it was a disaster. But it was heading south. As sure as you're standing, and I'm sorry we couldn't get you seats. We didn't have any room. And by the way, 20,000 people outside had to leave. You know? It's so cold outside, we told them, don't worry about a screen. Go home. Go home and watch. But we had this is about a 5,500-seat arena. And I said to my people, why so small? Are we spoiled? I watch these guys come in, like Biden. He has a big rally, and they get 93 people show up. No, it's true. I don't understand it. And did you see the new polls from USA Today came out? I'm killing everybody. And they hate me. USA Today hates me. USA Today hates me. But there's a poll, we're beating everybody. But so Biden has this rally, like, you know, they got 200 seats. But only a small number of people. So you know what they do? They set up a round table. So think of these people. They come in, they think they're going to listen to a speech. They end up sitting on a round table discussing. They must have been happy, right? We don't have enough room for round tables. I'm sorry, Fox. No, they set up a round table, but I think we're doing great. And you know, how do you beat what we've done? With the economy, with our great vets, with choice. You finally got choice. They've been trying to get it for almost 50 years. See, these people back here, your seat or stand is better, right? Right? But you know what? They're going to be much more famous. Because the cameras can't see you, they can only see them. And you know, the other thing, the cameras, you ever notice? I go to these stadiums, 25, 30,000 people. They never show the crowd. You know why? Because they don't want to have... If crazy Pocahontas goes to the middle of Central Park or whatever park, she's in Manhattan. You got me. And people, I mean, I could have Barron Trump go into Central Park and he'd get a crowd that would be just as... He's 13. He'd get a bigger crowd. But if she has a crowd, oh, these crowds are so big. I've had crowds over the last couple of weeks. We went to different Pennsylvania, Florida. But I mean, thousands and thousands of people can't get into these, you know, NBA arenas, right? Big arenas. And we set records at everyone because we use the floor. Thank you. I appreciate it. But we use the floor, right? The basketball court. So we set records at every arena. They never even mention the crowds. They never mention the crowds. It's sort of amazing. You know what? I don't think we've ever had an empty seat from the time I came down the escalator. That's a long time ago. I don't think we've ever had an empty seat. Now, what the crooked media does, though, if you got, like, over here, look how packed it is, and there's thousands outside, but please go home. You're going to catch a pneumonia. But here's the thing. If this man and that beautiful woman happen to get up because they want to go to the bathroom, those cameras will turn to those two seats, and they'll say, Trump was unable to fill up the arena. You know? I always get nervous when I see some. I know they're coming back. Nobody ever leaves our speeches. Because is there a better place to be in the world than a Trump rally? No problem. No problem. But every time I see a man get up. I see a beautiful woman with a baby, and they're getting up. The baby's going crazy, and they're getting up. They're going to take care. But I know they're going to be right back. And I say, fill those two seats. I don't want them to see it, because they'll say, couldn't fill up the arena. These are truly dishonest people. Okay. After 3 years of sinister witch hunts, hoaxes, scams, tonight the House Democrats are trying to nullify the ballots of tens of millions of patriotic Americans. Capped off with one of the greatest election evenings in history. Was that the greatest? Remember when they all said, no, you can't win Michigan, you can't. I did one in Grand Rapids, right? Grand Rapids. And we had 32,000 people that night. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. That means it was election day when I started speaking. Hillary, Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, and Bill Clinton, they did an emergency trip to Michigan at 6 o'clock. They got here at prime time. They started to speak. She had 500 people. I got here at 1 o'clock in the morning the next day, which is now election day. How many people were there? 32,000. 32,000 people outside, inside. It was the last speech in Michigan. And they said, well, sir, it's very hard to win Michigan. I said, why would it be hard? Here's the beautiful thing. Everything I told you, I've done, but much more so. I said I was going to bring car companies back. I said I was going to bring in. I just hope you people know that. I just hope you know it. But I'll never forget that night. And, you know, in all fairness to Bill Clinton, you know, he used to be a friend of mine until I ran for office. So. I like him. But he told, you know, the way they tried to shut him out, right? Because he's a pro. He's an instinct guy, right? He's instinct. He doesn't need polling companies and all. Who the hell wants him? You know, if you want a polling company, pick up the newspaper. The problem is the newspaper polls are more fake than the news they write. They write fake polls. It's true. They write fake polls. You call them suppression polls. You read them and you get depressed because it looks like you're doing badly. They do that. I think it's almost worse than what they write, and you can't get much worse than what they write. So what happens? So what happens is Bill Clinton said to Crooked Hillary, his very dishonest wife, said, Crooked Hillary, do you think he calls her Crooked Hillary? Mike? Maybe he just calls her Crooked. He said, Crooked, I'm telling you, Crooked, I don't like what I'm seeing in Michigan. I don't like what I'm seeing in Wisconsin. He said, I took a trip to Wisconsin, and I'll tell you what, they had those Trump Pence signs all the way to the convention area, every lawn. Every lawn. I don't like Wisconsin. And they said, oh, don't worry about it. What the hell does he know? They told him, what do you know? Remember they shut him out at the end? They didn't want him talking. He was right. I mean, I don't want to cause any problems in the family, but he was right. But he talked about Wisconsin, and he talked about Michigan. He said, Crooked, I'm telling you, Crooked, I don't like what I'm seeing in Michigan. I was in Michigan, and I'm telling you, you had those damn signs. I saw some houses where they had four of them on one lawn and two of them on the car. And he said, you horrible human being, you better start listening to me because you're going to get your ass whooped. And you know what happened? You know what happened? She didn't listen, fortunately. And she didn't come to Michigan enough. And she didn't come to Wisconsin, I think, at all, right? Because her polling data looked good. It looked good to me, too. Every time I went there, we had these crowds. So we won Wisconsin. We won Michigan. And the great Ronna McDaniel. Where is Ronna? Where is Ronna? Ronna. She was so horrible. I didn't know her. Ronna McDaniel. And she was so aggressive. She kept calling and said, could you please come out to Michigan? I said, who the hell are you? And I said, what do you mean, another trip? So anyway, we had these big crowds. I made it again. Then finally, I said, 2 weeks out, I said, Ronna, no more. We're going to win it or we're not. Okay, I promise. 2 days later, I get a call. Sir, could you please come out to Michigan one more time? So I said, she was the campaign chairman in Michigan. So I said, okay. And then I got the ultimate call. 6 o'clock in the evening for this final deal in Grand Rapids. Sir, could you come to Michigan tonight? And I thought I was just about finished. I went to a last great state. And I said, it's over. Now I sit back and I watch it. Let's see what happens, right? But she said, could you come to Michigan? I said, that is the most aggressive human being I've ever met. And we did it. And we won Michigan. And the word is that we're much higher right now in the polls than we were ever in 2016 in Michigan. You better remember when you walk into, you know, it's November 3rd this time. November 3rd. By the way, though, that evening, that incredible evening in November, right? One of the biggest nights in the history of television. You never hear them say it, so I might as well. That election and my debates, you see their debates are dying. Who wants to watch Buttigieg? Buttigieg. Buttigieg! You know what? I'm not going to say bad things about him. You know what? I'd love him to win. I thought I knocked off Pocahontas. I did it a year too early. A year too early. I give her credit. She then started to come back. I don't think she's going to make it, though. She's gasping. She's gasping for air. But congressional Democrats are directly attacking 2.3 million Michigan voters who rose up in 2016, won the state, and now the Democrats are very upset. They want to get Michigan back. They just don't know how to do it because they didn't do a thing for Michigan. They didn't do anything for Michigan. You just lost. All they did was take away your companies and let them go to Mexico and other places.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.